For over 10 years, we've been bringing you killer metal music and frank discussions about heavy metal. Wait, who the hell is Frank? You are tuned into MSR Cast, brought to you by Mainstream Resistance. Here are your hosts, Kerry the Metal Geek and Sean the Metal Pigeon. Keep it metal.
Awaken the monster inside me. Awaken and let it go forth unto these nations before me. The shadow that's lurking behind you, darkness you feel deep inside, churning and boiling inside you.
Welcome, my friends, back to MSR Cast. I am one of your hosts. I am Kerry the Metal Geek.
I'm Sean the Metal Pigeon.
What's up, man? How are you?
I'm great. I love the fact that we're back.
Yeah, we are back.
We're doing this.
Back to the monthly format, right? Hopefully not.
Yeah. I really want to do a little bit more in the next few months, like, because it really feels like, and it's not our fault.
Nope.
You know, there was Mother Nature happened. This thing happened in Houston.
And if you want to hear all about it, listen to the last episode of Metal Geeks, 137. We talk all about it. But how did you fare during the hurricane?
I mean, I was okay the entire time. I was worried about my parents' house, like in the their neighborhood was right next to the Brazos River, and they got really lucky because it came right up to the edge of their neighborhood, flooded a couple streets accessing the neighborhood, and then and it stopped. So they got really lucky. But the thing is, you know, my apartment complex, I was worried that because I live right next to a lake, I was worried that it was all going to spill over. I'm not going to get into it because it still stresses me out when I think about it. But I'll just say this, like that last when it was happening, it was honestly the most stressed I've ever been during a storm in Houston. And I have been here since 86 and have been through, and Carrie has been here too. I mean, we've been through all sorts of crazy storms in the city. That one really did scare the shit out of me. Oh, it really got to me because I was worried about you guys. I was worried about all my friends. I was worried about my parents were out of town. They were in California. So I was responsible for watching over their house. I tried to drive, that Saturday the storm really hit.
Yep.
On Sunday morning, there was a lull in the rain. So I tried to drive out to their house and I ended up getting into a little bit of high water and I just freaked out and turned around and was I can't do anything.
Yeah. It was right before it hit again. We made it to a Walgreens or something because we've been stuck in popcorn and stuff you're not supposed to eat, that type of stuff.
Right. Yeah.
But
you guys did a good job on the Metal Geeks episode of really going into it. But the anxiety of just staying, and you're cooped up in your house, and I'm just waiting for, and I never lost power, I never lost internet. I was really lucky. Too. And the thing is, you still have that cooped up anxiety. You know, that sort of they have a name for it. It's escaping me right now, but it's like where you have to go outside and do something, but you can't.
Yep.
And I couldn't even enjoy metal. I remember I was sitting there. I was like, I got to stop watching the news. I'm freaking myself out.
Yeah, we watched way too much of that.
It's toxic for your psychology after a while. So I started to watch movies. Nothing was sitting right with me. I couldn't even enjoy the Game of Thrones finale because that night the storm was hitting and there were tornado warnings on my phone. And it ruined the finale for me. It really ruined the finale for me. I tried listening to metal. I was like, I'm going to sit down and while I still have internet, I'm going to focus on metal. Nothing. I couldn't enjoy a single thing. So I stopped because I didn't want to ruin anything for myself.
Right.
I just have to deal with this. And I tried to read. And anyway, so it was just the worst time ever. I'm so glad that I'm here right now tonight doing this podcast and everything's back to somewhat normal here,
Normalcy is good, right?
I mean, when you're going through that experience, you just want normal. You're just like, I just want a sunny day. I just want to be able to go out and do my normal thing. And this is our normal thing,
Well, so. I'm glad you're okay. And I'm glad all of my co-hosts are good and everybody's family is good.
Yeah, it was the worst. I feel so bad for people in Puerto Rico right now. People in Florida who are still without power. If you're one of those people, I'm sorry. Hope everything gets better for those people.
But there was a Hurricane Harvey metal show coming up this weekend. I don't know if this is going to go out in time, but Sunday night at Rudyard, my ex-co-host actually from the show, Papa Josh, is one of the guys putting it together. Bunch of metal and punk bands are playing. Wolf Skull is playing. Just a bunch of cool bands. So if you're in the Houston area and you're hearing this before Sunday, what day is it? The
29th?
The 31st.
Oh, 31st. 30th.
The first.
Yeah, there's only 30 days in September, yeah.
Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah, go check it out.
Yeah.
Watch some cool metal, watch some cool punk bands. $5 to get in, donate a little bit of money. We'll put a link in the show note, actually.
Yeah.
So go to MSRcast.com or MetalGeeks.net, look for this new episode, and there will be a link right there. Let's talk about the band we just listened to, though.
Okay.
Jogpanza.
Yeah.
Jogpanza.
It's been a while for these guys.
Like 6-7 years?
Yeah.
Scourge of Light was the last album they put out.
Right, and they move. This is kind of like I understand. They're not a full-time band. They just do what they can.
No Broderick in the band anymore. He's gone. But featuring one of my favorite vocalists in the metal scene completely, Harry Conklin. The Tyrant.
He sounds good.
Amazing vocalist. Yeah. One of my favorites. Mark Briody's still the main guitar
writer.
Yeah, he's the main guy. So it definitely still has that Jagdpanzer feel to it.
Yeah. My favorite Jagdpanzer album, and I was never the biggest Jagdpanzer fan. I only got into them after the fact that of getting into other American power metal bands. But what was the album with the mech on it?
Mechanized Warfare.
Mechanized Warfare. That was a great album. That was good. That was like 2002 or something ridiculous like that.
When was that album? That was 2001.
Okay, yeah. I remember thinking like
Take to the Sky, great song.
I remember thinking they were gonna like that was the album that they was gonna get them going and they were gonna start doing things more regularly. It just never kinda worked out for them that way.
The last album, you know, I was listening to them on Spotify recently, you know, just going through all their albums. It's because it's easy to do when you're sitting there at work. I'm like, I'm going to listen to this album now, and I'm going to listen to this one. I really listened to Saying to the Throne, the Hamlet album.
I never listened to that one, I think.
And I really, you know, dived into it and listened to it, and it's a good album.
Yeah.
It's different.
Yeah.
It's a concept album about Hamlet.
Yeah, no elements to that story. You make it dark and dramatic enough, you know.
This month, in September, it's called The Deviant Chord. Actually, it came out.
Right, yeah.
Still not used to that.
Yeah, me either.
The song that I picked, I listened to the album twice today, and that's the first one that really...
I need to go listen to this entire album.
It's a good album. There's I wish the production was a little bit better. It sounds a little...
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
So, if you're a Jagdpanzer fan, like...
Be aware of these guys. There you go, yeah.
They're from Colorado, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people were like, oh, if you like I Stir with Jagdpanzer, he's like, okay.
Band. And then we'll get into... I was recently at a concert. I got sent the promo from Metal Blade recently, and I listened to it today. So, let's get into our next band, Sorcerer, on Metal Blade Records. The album is called The Crowning of the Fire King.
The thing that I was telling you almost kind of reminded me a little bit of like Pharaoh.
They were started in Stockholm, Sweden in 1988. Yeah, John Perez from Solitude Eternus through his record label Brain Ticket put out a compilation of his demos like in the mid-2000s. They had the first full length in 2015 and now their second full length in 2017, The Crowning of the Fire King. Let's go ahead and get into the song Siren from Sorcerer.
We'll be right back.
Indeed.
Achingly beautiful. Which is not the the kind of adjective you normally give to Danny Filth's voice. But this is off the new album, Kryptonia? Kryptonia.
Yeah, Kryptonia. Yeah,
whatever it's called.
the seductiveness of decay.
Yeah, this just came out on the 22nd, I believe, the same day this new Satyricon album came out. This is Cradle of Filth's second album with the new guitarist duo. They have a Shock on guitar and this guy named Richard.
I'm shocked by that.
Richard, what's his name? I can't remember the guy's name. Anyway, they were on the last album in 2015, Hammer of Witches. They replaced Paul Allender. And that album really reawakened my interest in Cradle of Filth. Because they had been, just on the decline. I had this feeling that Allender was checked out. When I saw them live in 2008, he looked bored on stage. And I was just kind of like, it bummed me out too. I was like, why are you on stage,
Yeah.
And so I was waiting for him to, something to happen with Cradle. And him leaving and Danny getting these two guys in was the shot in the arm this band needed. And that first album was really good. Hammer of Witches is a good album. This is a great album. In fact, I know that it's early yet, and I've only gotten to listen to it for a couple of weeks, but I think this is the best Cradle of Filth album since Nymphetamine. I think it might even be the best Cradle of Filth album since Midian back in 2000.
Wow, really?
It's so good.
Those are two of my favorite albums from them.
And you know why it's so good? Because the guitars are so inventive. They're so fresh.
And they cover Annihilator.
They do cover Annihilator, Allison in Hell. Which is a fun cover. Cradle of Filth always does fun covers. But, their original work in here, they have the perfect lineup right now for their time. They have two guitarists who are really fresh. They really are trying to harken back to the original spirit of the band, which was wild and inventive and very, very leaned on the Maiden influence. And the thing with my criticism of Paul Allender was that he was recycling his riffs so much that I could hear a new Cradle of Filth album with him on it and predict when the riff would change. I could predict when there would be a breakdown pattern. Everything was so predictable. And with these guys, the first time I listened to this album, I was just like, my eyes are going wide at certain changes they were doing. Like, wow, that's creative. That's inventive. It's forcing Danny to write in a different way and forcing him to be a little bit more of a He doesn't do a lot of more on these past two albums. He's really limited his high screaming. Mm-hmm. Now you can say that's due to age, but I think it's really due to these
guys.
I heard
a little bit on this song.
It was on this song. This is the most very old school Cradle song on the album. Yeah. He's more in a mid-tempo, aggressive, brutal way now, and which is good for him, good for us, because, you know, with Allender writing, it was just forcing Danny to kind of stay in the high register. But he's such a talented vocalist, and he doesn't get a chance to kind of show up that aggression that much. But now he has the perfect guitarist writing for him right now. They're like the Adrian Smith and Dave Murray that this band has needed.
Not the Yannick.
Not the
Paul Allender.
And
Yannick.
And Lindsay Schoolcraft, who's the keyboardist, is
female
fantastic.
Well.
She's also the female vocalist. She's fantastic. Her stuff is very tasteful. It's very creepy and gothic, but she never drenches it in everything. She knows when to pull back, and her vocals are great. And I don't know. I'm so energized by listening to Cradle now. It's like, you know, I would listen to their past few albums when Allender was in the band and just kind of like think to myself, like, why are they still doing this? You know, why are they still putting out music? Because nothing sounded fresh, you know, nothing since Nymphetamine.
What's he doing now?
I don't know. I've written about him in the past where I've kind of dumped on him, and I don't even think against the guy. I just think he stayed in the band too long.
He's in a band called White Empress.
Oh, okay, that's cool. You know, Paul Allender was amazing on Midian. I mean, that album is his defining work. That was just an amazing album. But
I think the last good, I'm looking at their list of albums right now, the last album that I could say that I enjoyed was Thornography.
I liked a few songs off Thornography, but it had the same problems. Nymphetamine was really creative. You could tell they were on a high, but even before Nymphetamine, Damnation and Day, I thought was really just derivative, and that sucked because that album was following up Midian, which was, in my opinion, maybe the greatest.
I will admit,
album.
There's three albums in a row I never even listened to.
Yeah,
maybe a little Godspeed on the Devil's Thunder, Darkly, Venus Versa, and I know I've never heard Midnight in the Labyrinth at all.
Midnight in the Labyrinth was awful.
I mean,
it's listenable, but it's barely just
it's a double
listenable.
Album too.
Yeah,
holy crap! All right.
So, well, no, it's that just the instrumental tracks, I think.
But no, it's they do. Wait a minute, is this like they redid older songs? Because there's Dusk in Her Embrace and Cruelty Brought the Orchid,
right?
That?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Re-recorded orchestral version of the song taken from the band's first four albums.
Right.
That's why I never listened to it.
Wait, am I thinking of Darkly, Venus, or Versa? That was the terrible album.
I don't think I ever listened to that one either.
That was the one I did not buy, actually. Yeah, that one.
I don't think I've ever heard one song on that album.
Yeah.
I remember seeing the album cover, I think I was just out by that point.
Richard Shaw is the other guitarist's name, Richard Shaw.
All right. So, new Cradle of Filth is good.
It's good. They're on a European tour right now. It's just starting, I think, like in a couple of days. If you haven't listened to Hammer of Witches, that was their 2015 release, you should go back and listen to that one. But really, just start with this one because they are firing on all cylinders. And the thing that's kind of aggravating about it is that it doesn't seem like the metal world has realized that yet. But, I mean, I know that I've seen some buzz. Hammer of Witches got really good reviews. There are people now kind of coming around to the fact that, oh, Cradle of Filth, two new guitarists, it's kind of working. They need to be back up at that status again when they were in the 90s to 2000, where they were maybe, one of the most, biggest names in the metal. Because I think they have that ability to get there again. They just needed to put out good albums, and they're finally doing it.
Cool. So before that, of course, we listened to the band Sorcerer. We listened to it again, and a couple other things came to mind while we were listening to it. I heard a little bit of... A little bit of slower doom, but not in the I don't want to. It's more happy,
right?
But I did hear some tinges of like Solitude Eternus and that type of stuff. But you mentioned something as well about it's like definitely Heaven and Hell era Black Sabbath.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a part in that song, well, a lot of parts in that song where they just had that kind of same, almost that same tempo and
yeah,
like rhythm guitar tempo where you have the ability for the vocalist to careen over it.
It's really good.
And yeah, it's good.
I really want to listen to this album a lot more too.
Yeah. No, I'm definitely going to check that band out. Yeah.
Let's talk about the concert I saw last week.
Oh yeah.
You want to?
Yeah, sure.
You want to? Let's do it. So the main reason I went to the show was the opening band.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Apparently, okay, so there was another opening band. I don't remember what they're called now, but they didn't wind up playing because the drummer got hurt and wound up having to get surgery,
oh,
like that day or something.
Yikes.
They were there at the merch booth, and I felt bad.
They were touring with them?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know what happened. I didn't ask for any details or anything. They just had a sign up on their merch booth. So that meant that the second band on the tour, Insomnium, was the opening.
Yeah.
And they were up there quick. Doors opened like at 6:30. They were playing by like 6:45, 6:50.
Wow.
Yeah. So I would have been mad if I got there later planning to miss the first band and they were already on. But they played about, I would say, 30, 35 minutes. I think they had one extra song on the set list compared to what I saw because a little bit more time to play.
Like six songs or something?
I think so. they play seven songs. Okay. They played three songs off the new album, or three parts.
Parts, right.
Off of Winter's Gate.
Yeah.
And actually four parts. They played 1, 2, 3, and then they took a break, played some other stuff, and then they went back to 4.
Yeah.
I just wish they played the whole album in its entirety. I would have been entirely happy. But this was at Warehouse Live. And opening bands, most bands, any band that plays there, they never really get a good sound. It was it was very muddled, very it sucks. And they put on a good show. They were really into the crowd.
They're great.
The crowd was so into them.
Yeah,
they were, that energy was feeding back and forth between the crowd and the band, and you could see them smiling the whole time they were playing. We're like, that's not metal, dude. Don't smile. But man, Insomnium is one of my favorite bands right now, and they put on a great show. I loved it. Loved them.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I saw them, it was like their last leg of whatever they were doing, the One for Sorrow tour. No, the Shadows of the Dying Sun, I think.
Yeah.
They were opening again for Epica, because, you know, this show you saw was Epica, Lacuna Coil, and Insomnium. I saw them on Epica, Ailstorm, Insomnium. And I went there just for Insomnium. I wrote about it at length on the blog. And that was a breathtaking show. They only got six songs, but they played kind of the greatest hits they had, you know? And I remember when they were doing, I think they actually played One for Sorrow, and just the crowd, the fans who were there for Insomnium were super into it. And I was like right up there in the front. And it really just was one of those shows that transcend the actual barrier of you just watching a band. Like, you were part of the show. I can't wait to see them headlining. That's my thing. They totally missed Texas when they were playing the entire album tour. I think they came to North America doing that, right?
Yeah, they did. So it looks like they played a couple off dates, and they did play Winter's Gate in its entirety.
Oh, how nice.
How nice that they didn't do it here, you know?
Yeah.
But they did say that they will be back next year on a headlining show.
Yeah, they better
back. March, April, May, okay, that type.
Yeah.
And I know one of the bands that possibly might be opening up on this tour, label mates of them.
Uh-huh.
Super excited for this. This is super cool.
Okay.
Can't tell you anything yet.
Okay,
but
cool.
I'll let you know later.
As long as they're headlining, that's all I care.
That's what they said.
Like, no offense to Epica fans, Lacuna Coil fans, it's just $30 to go see, you know, them play six songs, maybe.
Yeah.
You know?
Let me finish up with Insomnium.
Yeah.
So two of the guys, the singer and then the guitar player, they went to the booth for a little bit. So I was able, I bought a T-shirt, which had like every fucking tour date for the past year and a half on there. It's super long. Have you seen it?
No.
It's crazy. I'll show you a picture of that.
Okay.
And yeah, I bought the vinyl for Winter's Gate and I got an autograph that. That was awesome. But so I was on the guest list for Lacuna Coil by the record label. So let me just preface that. Let me say that. All honesty, I liked Lacuna Coil back in the day.
Oh sure,
I really did like them. Their first EP that came out in the
Comalize,
then Unchained, whatever it was.
That's where they lost me. It was that third album.
So the first couple albums, yeah, I really really liked what they were doing. They were something new. They were different. They wrote good songs.
Yeah.
Not so much anymore. They were doing this weird stage show, something about an insane asylum. I haven't really listened to the new album.
Yeah, I saw some of the pictures.
So even the older songs that they were playing, like Heaven's a Lie, that type of stuff, it just didn't felt very forced and going through the motions. I don't know. Truthfully, I went outside for most of their show and was hanging out with some friends.
Right.
Yeah, so can't say that they put on a great show. But if you're a Lacuna Coil fan, a current fan, you probably had a great time because there was a lot of people into it.
Yeah.
And I don't fault that. I don't fault you for liking something that I might not be into.
They're a gateway band, you know. I think for a lot of people, they were a gateway band. Still are, maybe.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, cool.
And I don't deny that they wrote some great songs in their career, and that I will leave it at that.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked Comalize a lot, and I remember talking maybe to you about it way back in the day when they first got released. I'm like, have you ever heard this band, Lacuna Coil? At the time, they were fresh, and remember back in 2000, 2001, there wasn't a lot of female fronted metal going on.
No, there wasn't. I interviewed them on that first album.
Right.
And I ran the interview in an issue of Mainstream Resistance back in the day. And I remember I was interviewing with Mario, right?
There were two Marios in the band back then.
Okay, the male singer, what's his name?
Oh, Andrea.
Andrea, yeah.
Yeah.
So I interviewed him, and great interview. It was a good interview. I think if I can pull that up somewhere. And then he's like, and I'm doing an Italian accent horribly, so I'm not going to try. He's like, my other singer is here, Christina. Would you like to speak to her? I was like, sure. So it wound up being like sort of a two-part interview. And I remember this specifically. I asked her, what can you tell me about yourself that nobody knows yet? She literally said, you can print this. I like to fuck other women.
I think you told me this before.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, oh, what do I say to that? Do I?
Right.
I was like, no, I don't think I printed it either. I don't remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause wasn't trying to be that type
salacious
of magazine.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But, so Epica played, right? I like Epica.
Yeah.
In doses. Let me put it that way. They're a great fucking live band. They had an amazing stage show. They had lights and, okay, so I was hanging out with my friend. We were watching him, right? It was weird. So we saw the keyboardist, right? And then we stopped paying attention for a second. All of a sudden, he was on stage right. And the next thing we knew, he was on stage left with his keyboard. Full Korg keyboard. We're like, what the hell is going on? How did he get over there with the setup? So we watched him. His keyboard setup, his Korg setup, everything, he has it like on the Segway type of device. I'm serious.
Just drifts across the stage.
And he would drive it behind the drum set, behind the drum riser to get from side to side.
Wow.
It blew my mind.
Yeah,
it was amazing.
Crazy. It's not that big of a stage, is it? Jeez, I guess it is.
It was a pretty decent size.
Yeah.
And then he would come out at one point. He has like this circular keyboard that he wears around his neck, and it goes up to the front of the, you know, front of stage type of stuff.
Yeah.
Very cheesy.
Yeah, there's no way to make that look cool.
No. But the one thing, I like them a lot, I will preface that, but I can't listen to them in a large amount because a lot of the time their songs will start to sound the same.
The same, yeah.
And it was definitely prevalent at the show. I guess it was the way they're playing songs together, the way the set list maybe was.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I do enjoy watching them live. They are a great live band. They're tight.
Right.
They know what they're doing. The drummer is fucking phenomenal.
Yeah.
They're just a great live band.
Mark Jensen's still the...
Yes.
Does he still do vocals a lot for them? He does. Yeah. He's phenomenal.
No, he does some... I wish he would do more harsher vocals,
right,
too.
And that's the thing. You know, like, I don't know. People always ask me, like, why I don't write about Epica? Because I have a lot of their fans, Camelot fans, are readers of the blog. And I don't like to dump on the band, so I don't. I mean, I think I know why Epica is popular. I think, you know, their fan, I mean, for whatever reason, I think it's what you were saying, that their songs just sound the same. And when they sound the same in symphonic metal, that's, they don't have enough of a personality. And first of all, I frankly just don't think that they have the songwriting. They don't have any one single song that makes me go, I get it. You know,
like, I disagree on that. There's probably about, for me, there's probably about three or four songs that really stand out in their career. Essence and Silence is one of them. They did play that live.
See, I can't think of any of like any hook, any like may, you know, like when I tell people who aren't power metal fans, when I mention the word Nightwish to them, they'll think of that hook to Nemo, which is maybe one of the hookiest power metal song of all time.
Yeah,
and that's that's like, you know, as Josta would say, that's a hit. You know, I mean, and I think if you're a power metal band, you know, like Camelot, they had Somewhere in Time featuring Simone Simmons of Epica, but that song, you'll remember that song. It's ingrained in your brain when you hear it the first time.
Sure.
And Epica never had that for me. You know, with Lacuna Coil, no matter whether you like them or hate them, you know what Heaven's a Lot, you know that chorus and that song, you know, because it was all over the place for that year and the years later. I mean, you got to have a song that pops, and I think for Epica, they never really got that for me. Clearly, I'm in the minority because they're huge, well, relatively speaking, for a European metal band. So, I don't know. I just choose not to write about them if I don't have anything, you know, if I feel like I can't be objective, that's a stupid thing to say about reviewing, but if you can't, I don't know, if you don't like sardines, why are you going to eat sardines? You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, the one song that I would say that just, you know, really puts their whole career into one song, it's, I think the third album, it was The Divine Conspiracy, 2007. The song, The Obsessive Devotion.
Okay.
You might not remember the name, but you know the songs.
I'll go back and listen to that. Yeah, just to see how it's changed.
Never Enough,
maybe,
with a very poppy tune they did put out. Yeah. I had a good time watching them, but, you know, I left before their encore. So, you know.
One thing on the Lacuna Coil.
Yeah.
If you go back and listen to Como Eyes, you'll realize, like, oh yeah, they actually did have complexity in their guitar work one point.
They did.
And then that 2004 album, oh, you know what? Forget Como Eyes. That's the one where they lost me. It's Unleashed Memories is the one I loved.
That's their first full length, yeah. Unleashed Memories, that's right.
That was the one. Yeah, that one. Unleashed Memories, that's the one where if you go back and you listen to it, the guitar work is like fairly intricate, and it's got some complexity to it. Not overly, but it reminded me a lot of like The Gathering and stuff, you know? And
no, yeah, definitely. I agree on that.
Como Eyes was when they lost me, because that's the one where Heaven's a Lie is on.
Swamped, Heaven's a Lie. Yeah.
And you know what it was? The American radio rock sound, that they kind of drifted into that.
Well, they drifted into them like a Madonna. They wanted that really pop, sensible style that would get airplay. What they were going for.
I could see that in the vocal melodies, but on the guitars, I don't criticize her for her voice. I think she's a lovely singer, but I criticize the guitarists for their lack of inventiveness and daring when they're in their riffs.
Karma, you know? Code was the last decent album. That's their third full length.
I think they maybe listened to that in passing.
Fragile, Our Truth, you know these songs.
I know Our Truth.
Closer, yeah. After that, I think is when they really, okay, so those songs were starting to reach the precipice of, hey, we could get some radio play with this type of stuff. So let's really push towards that, and that's where they took that swan dive for me.
What's disappointing is that because they have changed members so much, they lost their original two guitarists, and they have new guys in the band, and nothing's changed. You know, it's just like they sound the same. I mean, you know, we go back to, we were talking about Cradle of Filth in the show. They lose their longtime guitarist. He had been in the band for 15 years or 14 years. They lose him, and they get these two new guys in, and the two new guys provide the band with some spark, some creative, new creative inspiration. Same thing with Richie Faulkner joining Priest.
Right.
And I love that album, Redeemer of Souls.
Not going to go there.
Well, I know we disagree on this album, but I thought, man, that this sounds, this is the Priest that I love, and this is the most fun I've had listening to a Judas Priest album in who knows, I can't even remember. You need sometimes new blood in these long running bands. Lacuna Coil, unfortunately, they got that new blood, but they didn't get anything out of it. Just sort of like, I guess her and the other vocalist are kind of calling the shots, and we want the band to sound like this. We want these generic radio rock riffs. But oh, I said I wasn't going to say anything bad about the band. All right,
let's move on. We're kind of long on this segment. Let's get into the next band. The band we're going to play next is a band that I really love a lot called Gruesome.
Yeah.
Matt Harvey's a friend of the show, he's a friend of Metal Geeks. We've had him on the show before. I still talk to him pretty regularly. He's a great guy, great band. I love the new Exhumed album. I love this new Gruesome. This is a EP they just put out in 2017, new song called Fragment of Psyche. And there's some demo stuff on here and a desk cover. Can you imagine they did a desk cover? That's pretty hard to believe,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, that is sarcasm, guys. So let's get into the new song from Gruesome. This is from the EP Fragment of Psyche. This is the title track. Hey, I sound like a douche when I say it like that. This is the title track for the new album.
do is choke and pay. You keep pulling on that rope like a leash round my neck. My neck. Still, it's all I ever wanted. Every little drop of poison was my cure. But nothing is left to destroy. I want more. Killing me. What am I supposed to do?
Welcome back, my friend, to MSRcast episode number 198. That was some Nocturnal Rites right there.
Mm-hmm.
My God, we were just looking up some information about them. I'm like, oh, it's been a while since the last album.
Yeah.
10 years.
10 years.
10 fucking years since the last Nocturnal Rites album. I like this band a lot, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
That song is super catchy. It's super good.
Yeah.
The song is called What's Killing Me. The album is called Phoenix. And it is available now, as of today,
yeah,
as of recording this. Go out and pick it up or listen to it on your Spotify or whatever means you do to get your music into your ears now.
It's amazing how easy, or I guess not easy, but it's amazing how consistently those kinds of amazing hooks and choruses come to bands like this. And you listen to other bands and you go, like, you know, like, is it really that hard? Some bands just have it, and Nocturnal Rites has always had it. Yeah, I can't believe it's been 10 years. They just sort of drifted out of the, and you were saying that one, because one of their guys is Scar Symmetry.
Per Nilsson.
Yeah. He's kind of the main guy in Scar Symmetry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I guess he's been busy. And
well, they haven't done anything in like 2 or 3 years. So I guess this is, I guess he decided to bring Nocturnal Rites back in that interim.
Yeah. Is it just me or they sound a little more hard rockish than they used to?
It's definitely a little bit more AOR.
I need to go back and listen to their older stuff, but it did sound a little less straight up power metal. That kind of reminds me of what Silent Force did on that last album in 2014, where it was like very Whitesnake influence. And I'm kind of like, wow, this is, it's good, but it's strange because, you know, Silent Force was such a classic power metal, classicist power metal band, I should say. That's this thing in power metal that's happened. And you would think that it would have gone through its hard rock injection phase. It's still there, you know, like, I mean, because this is definitely, like you said, A&R influenced, and not that that's a bad thing. I love that kind of stuff, but I do wonder when we're going to get that full-blown return to straight-faced, kind of Halloween-inspired power metal.
Apparently, they have a couple official music videos, so we need to peruse those so we can talk shit about them later.
Yeah.
They're not going to be very good.
They're not
going
to be good, no.
So yeah, new Nocturnal Rites. That's really cool. I'm excited for that. I really need to.
I need to listen sit down the entire album.
Yeah, this entire album. And before that was Gruesome featuring friend of the show Matt Harvey from Exhumed. Mm-hmm. He has a couple other bands that are working on stuff now too. But Gruesome is their, let's just say, death influenced love band.
Yeah.
Great band. I love Gruesome.
Gruesome is exactly how that band should sound.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
Sound exactly like they should sound.
You want to talk about the next band?
Yeah.
It's an unsigned band, which we like to play from time to time. Band called Winter's Wake. We listened to it earlier. What do you want to say about it? They do a actual heavy metal version of the Game of Thrones theme song.
That's right. Yeah, they do that.
Go to their YouTube page. You can actually watch that. It's pretty funny.
It's interesting. You can tell they have an ambitious streak. But it was very, it's like folky almost. And
they consider themselves Viking metal.
Viking metal, yeah.
But it's American. They're an American band. Where they're from Staten Island, New York.
Yeah.
So...
yeah,
I mean, definitely influenced by a lot of the you know, European like Viking stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it's cool. I think it's interesting. You know, because they're only on their EP, right? They haven't actually released a full length yet.
No, this is their second EP. The first one was like in 2011.
Yeah,
this came out earlier this year.
I'll say this, rarely have I ever heard in metal, in just metal period, a demo, well, not a demo, but a demo or a pre-album EP before a band has released its debut that's really wowed me. So, but it's always that, you know, the band will have seeds of potential if you get in early enough to hear a demo before they release an album, which is rare for me. I usually end up, I'm like late to the party and all this stuff. So it's... I could see this band doing something interesting in the future, you know.
And I really like, I do appreciate the style with the harsher vocals included here.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy to just to throw that away, throw it out the window now.
Right. Well, what I like is the seriousness of, you know, the one thing I heard from them was they have that kind of gravitas. They're going for that style as opposed to the cartoonish direction that I so often trash on this show that I'm sick of.
The Viking metal?
Yeah, because you can go one of two ways. You can either take it really seriously or, and you know, earlier this year, we had an episode in April, I believe, where we were really talking about different folk metal that's coming out this year that is very much on the serious track. Like it's almost like a rejection away from the cartoony stuff. The bands, I won't mention their names right now. You all know who they are.
We know.
You know, like we played a song from Wolfheart, from King of Asgard. Those two albums I still listen to, and they're exciting, and it's like, yeah, I can feel that old folk metal, that real raw kind of, it's almost a black metal influenced folk metal spirit.
Right.
And that's what I like. So that's these guys are on the right track, at least. They have the right influences.
So let's check out the band. They are called Winter's Wake. They have an EP out called Awake. Yeah, I think it was the EP Awake.
Awake, yeah.
And the song we're going to hear is called Awake.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So let's check it out.
Oh,
So that was Caligula's Horse.
It's right. That's not, the name of the band.
Not Caligula's Whores.
Whores. No, as, that's a different band.
As I mistakenly heard the first time. Yeah.
That's a band name I've always heard, and until recently I never listened to because it sounded something that would not be in my realm of enjoyment.
Yeah.
But it is. I do enjoy these guys. They're it sounds like this to be like a typical mall metal type band, but they're an Australian band. Definitely very progressive side of heavy metal. The way I say the band name, that I always say they're very much like Haken.
Yeah.
How do you say it?
Haken.
Okay. I hear a little bit of, we talked about this earlier, a little bit of Between the Buried and Me in there, when they get really spacey and progressive and stuff like that. I hear a lot of, in his clean vocals, I hear a lot of really, really clean, the really beautiful voice that Michael Akerfeld can have.
I don't hear the Akerfeld as much as you do, I think. For me, it's very much Between the Buried and Me. And in fact, when I was commenting earlier, it sounds like Between the Buried and Me mixed with like the kind of bizarre time changiness of Faith No More, of like old Faith No More,
okay.
You know, like, I mean, maybe not vocally, but musically, they kind of reminded me of that. And I was mentioning to you earlier, like Voyager, they kind of remind me of that.
Yeah, Voyager,
who's another Australian band.
So these guys are very avant-garde, very all over the place.
All over the place.
Yeah, very. But I tend to gravitate towards that style of prog metal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I really enjoy these guys. I'm gonna definitely dive back into their catalog. It's just like their third or fourth album, and check them out even more, because I always thought it was like a horrible band. Just by the name alone, just like Between the Buried and Me, people probably don't give them the time of day because
the band name.
Yeah. But they're a lot more progressive and spacey than people give them credit for, and they do have a lot of that degent stuff in their music. But
yeah,
and they're not the best band live. I will say that.
Right. Yeah.
I attested to that last year when they opened up for Devin Townsend. But yeah. I do quite enjoy them a lot, and I get that same feeling out of Caligula's Horse.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, these bands like who sound like this, I'm always interested in it, and I think what I sometimes miss is, because what I liked about that song that we played is whenever they hit the chorus, then you get that vocal melody carrying it. But in between those times, in between the iterations of the chorus, the verses are just kind of just so disjointed, even vocal. There is no vocal melody. He's just kind of, you know, he's just kind of going with the instrumentation. I just kind of feel like, I need something.
It's that avant-gardeness.
I need something to tie it together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that. I see your point on that, but right. Yeah. So we hope you enjoyed that. We also hope you enjoyed the band before that, unsigned band that we played on the show called Winter's Wake. From New York, very much in the style of, you know, European Viking metal, but taking some of the cheese out of it.
And, right.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So, before we get into our last two songs of the evening, I wanted to mention this. I'm a huge Arion fan.
Everyone knows this.
Everybody knows
by
this.
By now.
They just did their first live shows ever. In the Netherlands. Wish I could have been there. But they did record it for Blu-ray release, which is hopefully Arjen got a better company to film than they did the live equation.
Yeah.
Because that was horrific.
Yeah.
It was not shot well, was not edited well, and it was painful to watch. Sounds great.
Right, yeah.
Perfect sounding show, but yeah. So basically... he did the three-night show, basically the same set list almost every day. And they played songs from his whole career, from all of Arion and a little bit of Star One. There wasn't other things which should have been great.
Right.
If they would have thrown some...
Was he there playing?
He was there,
That's
yeah.
awesome, yeah.
Yeah. So you had Mike Mills on was there. Hanzi was there. Marcella Bovio was there. Flora Johnson was there. Jonas Rinske from Catatonia. Annika was there. Let's see, Mike Mills, Damien Wilson, who is no longer in Threshold.
Right.
We'll get to that next time we play Threshold on the show. Marco Hayatala, Tommy Karavik was there. Just all these amazing vocalists and musicians.
One night, his wow. career. Well, yeah, it's cool.
Three different shows.
Three different shows, yeah.
I really would have liked to be there. It would have been pretty awesome. There's stuff from every album ranging from the very first album all the way to the brand new album. And looking at the set list, I cannot wait for this to come out on Blu-ray so I could watch it over and over.
Yeah, good of him to film it, because sometimes these shows happen like this and they don't. And filming is not part of the equation or something.
Right.
So, yeah,
exactly.
Good on him for doing that.
Well, yeah, I mean... He has to bring it out to the people since he doesn't really tour at all.
Right. Yeah.
He doesn't like traveling.
Right.
So I think that's what it is. So he was able to do these shows close enough to home. And these are big production shows. So it's not just, hey, we got some guys together. It's like the Live Equation was a huge stage production, everything. So if you're an Arion fan like I am, look forward to this to come out pretty soon, hopefully.
Do you think he doesn't like traveling or he doesn't like touring? Like, he's got to go take trips and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, I'm sure. It's probably the touring part, because that's a big hassle.
I just wonder, how do you sustain yourself financially if you're not touring in this industry,
I don't know.
I have no idea how he manages that. Like, what? You have some financiers we don't know about, like... underwriting your whole existence here? What's going on?
I don't know. I wish I could tell you. Do you have any other topics you wanted to discuss tonight? Not political.
Well, I was telling you this earlier.
Take a knee, dude. Come on, take a knee.
I'm so disappointed that Xandria and Diane Van Giersbergen parted ways.
No relation to Annika.
No relation to Annika, but
is that a popular name there?
It must be like
Dutch
Smith
name?
Or Jones or something.
Right?
She was such a great vocalist for that band in particular. She was great in Ex Libris, and I think she's still with Ex Libris. But
that's why the tour got canceled, because.
Her statement. She released a statement on Facebook and on Instagram, pretty much explaining that hey. I was having health problems, like with my voice, and we were touring so much that it was beginning to deteriorate and everything. And she wanted them to she was hoping that they could kind of take a few more days in between shows. But the band is in this mode where they just have to tour just to be financially viable, I guess. Which I can understand that perspective. I just think that knowing what first of all, let me just say, Xandria's ex vocalist. She came out and also supported Diane with a statement that kind of corroborated a lot of the things that she was saying about the band, of like they didn't really respect her health problems, and that sucks, because I saw these guys live and they were so great. But let me tell you something, they were great because Diane was spectacular, maybe the best technical vocal performance I've ever seen in person. It was just flawless.
Now, this is still a band I can't really get into. They're a little over the top for me.
They are, but for that, it's symphonic. It's Nightwish inspired symphonic metal. It's going to be over the top. But
I didn't like Nightwish until Floor joined the band.
Right. So. Yeah. And this is more a throwback to the Taria era type stuff.
Okay.
But they had their own identity.
Taria has a Christmas metal album coming out or something.
Yeah, I saw that.
You're looking forward to that, I bet.
Yeah. But Xandria's last album, Sacrificium, great album. I really enjoyed it. And I thought these guys are on they're on the roll. They have it going. And it's just disappointing that it has to come down to this, where a band is choosing money and, you know, that kind of thing instead of like realizing they had a good singer.
Now they don't have a singer, do they?
They have a fill-in vocalist to do their tour.
But they still canceled the tour in America.
They did, yeah.
So they're losing money right there.
Yeah, yeah. Which I'm sure they're blaming her for it. I know they had like things like the management was involved, and maybe the management is influencing their decisions. I just think that's crappy. I just think it sucks.
Are they that big of a band?
I don't know. I mean, maybe
in America at least, right? I mean, they're not that big of a band in America yet.
Right. Yeah, and I think one of the problem is that they have to tour so much because they're not at that level of being a big band where they can get big guarantees and stuff like that. So I guess
don't start your band name with an X.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, I don't know. I think they had a great vocalist to begin with. They let her go, you know, acrimoniously, and then they have another one and they let her go acrimoniously. Who is more likely to be at fault?
Well, apparently there's female vocalists in metal bands everywhere, so they'll find somebody.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
They're like a dime a dozen now, right?
Yeah, I'm not too worried about them. I mean, this has kind of soured me on them a little bit. I'll give their next album a shot, but yeah.
Not good business practices.
No, it's not, and it's just, I don't know. Yeah, it soured me on them a little bit, unfortunately.
So let's talk about this polarizing album that has just come out.
Yeah.
The new Satyricon.
Yeah, but although, you know, they've been polarizing people since Rebel Extravaganza back in 99. I mean, people then cried, like, what the fuck, back then, you know?
I like that album.
Yeah, I mean, back then they were accused of, like, you guys are going industrial and stuff. And it's like, when you go back and you listen to that album, it's like, there's not that much industrial album. It's just textures here and there. And then, you know, Volcano comes out in 2002, and they start simplifying their sound, and then all of a sudden they have a hit single on that album that's very black and roll, you know?
And
people say, like, oh, they've been black and roll for years. Well, they kind of pioneered that sound along with a few other bands themselves. You know, like, whatever
people... What other bands?
Well, I mean,
Well,
even though they're not black metal, I would say like Entombed, along the same time that Dark Throne and Entombed started simplifying their sound.
Carcass, I would say.
And going, well, I don't know about Carcass, but Dark Throne and Entombed in particular, when they stripped their sound back and became more rock and roll influenced.
Yeah. I'm talking about the rock and roll influence, just that simple riff. Just
simple riffing, but I think Satyricon was already doing that ahead of time. I'm not saying that they started it. I'm just saying that it seemed to be like a natural reaction for them to go in that direction after Rebel Extravaganza. Because that was before that was Nemesis Divina, the most triumphant Satyricon album of all. So they've been doing this black and roll thing for over a decade now. And then on their the album before this was 2013, their self-titled album.
I don't think I listened to that album.
It was a very divisive album because they really did something crazy with their sound, and which was... I had a hard time figuring out what it was, but I wrote in my review that they had basically kept all the elements of black metal intact of their approach to black metal, which is sort of black and roll slash whatever avant-garde, but they removed the overt aggression from it. And so what you're left with was the sound of black metal without this snarling aggression, which is what you would expect from hearing any black metal album. And it was kind of like they were deconstructing black metal in a way that was like different from, you know, how like Def Haven mixes shoegaze. You know, instead of mixing stuff into it to make it different, they were purposely stripping back elements. So that sound that has carried over into the new album, but and I like that album, as divisive as it was, I liked parts of it. But what makes this new album, in my opinion, the best Satyricon album since, I would say, Nemesis Divina, is that it is, the songwriting is so inspired. And if you weren't keeping up with what happened with Satyricon a couple years ago, or just a few years ago, Satyr had a big health scare. He had discovered a brain tumor.
Oh, wow.
And
I do remember that now.
Because one day he just felt really ill. His, you know, family's freaking out. They get him to the hospital, and they discover this tumor is in his brain. And so far, it's benign.
Was it a tumor?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like this growth.
Not a tumor.
And the doctors say, well, okay, if it grows any larger, you were going to have to go...
Was it cancerous? Did they...
it's not cancerous right now.
Okay.
They're not sure if it will be in the future. So he wrote, I remember on Instagram, he came out at that time and he said, like, this is what the situation is. And they tell me that if it grows any bigger, we're going to have to operate. And it's going to be like major, you know, brain surgery, basically.
I'm very familiar with this.
And so I started following him on Instagram after that because I thought I didn't even realize he was on it until that statement came out and my friend let me know. And I remember being surprised at just how candid he was on his Instagram. He like has pictures of himself, his kids, his family, his winemaking, which is like a real side thing he does. Like,
that's not very black metal.
Yeah, well, I mean, he has these like wine tasting dinners and everything.
Maybe he uses black grapes. Maybe that's what it is.
he like has these fancy dinners at Norwegian restaurants for his wine company. It's just a whole different side of him. It's one of the most refreshingly candid feeds on Instagram from any metal musician. Everyone should go follow him. But I just started following him and I started keeping up with what he was doing. He would comment on people's replies and he would give health updates every now and then. And he said before this album came out, in the press release, actually, he says that I went into this album writing it like it might be my last album. Like that's the mindset he went into it with. And when you read the lyrics on the album, it is about kind of like this impending sense of mortality that hovers around him and stuff. And how he called the album deep calleth upon deep. Because the entire album is the theme of it is about the ability to appreciate art, which sounds weird as a concept, but he's basically saying like a creator of the art has to dig deep to create the art that is meaningful, like meaningful art, like in-depth art, and a listener has to sort of give a part of himself up in order to appreciate that as well.
Okay.
So deep calleth upon deep, you know, it's like I'm calling to you. I'm putting out my deepest emotions in these lyrics and these songs, and I'm asking you to dig deep to reach it. And what, you know, bothers me sometimes about the immediate response to their sound changing and their production and it's a very warm sound. It's almost kind of dry in places, but they have it carried over some of the stuff from the last album where they stripped the aggression back. Although this album is definitely more aggressive, like the song we played or we're going to play. And, yeah, it is the best Satyricon album, I think, in start to finish since Nemesis Divina, absolutely. Because it's so full of conviction and like the songs are very vital and the lyrics are amazing. There's a song on that we're not going to play, but I thought about playing it. It's called From Our Brethren, From Your Brethren to in the Dark. And it's basically just kind of about the lyrics are so poetic and it's like kind of about like sharing whatever internal spirit, you know, like that keeps you into. And I think a lot of it is about being a metal fan. Like a lot of that stuff that he's talking about is kind of like,
yeah,
you know, pass whatever you have on to someone else, you know, share whatever you love with someone else.
That is deep right there.
Yeah. And so I think people need to give this album more time. Like it just came out the other week, right?
Yeah.
If it doesn't hit you immediately, you got to go back and give it more time and sit with it for a little bit.
I know it's a very polarizing reaction to this album. Even on I saw one of your posts about it. You got called out
immediately.
From somebody. And I was like, wow.
Who said something like it's a pose or it's fake or something. Like not my review, but the album itself. And I was like, I don't understand that. So
check out Sean's review at themetalpigeon.com. Read it, listen to the album, make up your own decision. That's what metal is. That's what any kind of reviews, any kind of, you know, criticism, what critics are is just putting their opinions out there. You don't have to agree with that opinion. You can make up your own.
Yeah. But there's something in particular about this one where it's like,
I have my own opinion about it. You can't change
like
it.
I love the title, Deep Calleth Upon Deep. Satyricon always makes me think about their lyrics a lot, you know? Like, they had an album a couple years ago called, in 2008, called The Age of Nero.
And when
you think about that title, The Age of Nero, you think, what the hell are they talking about? But what he was actually referring to is how he feels like we are living in the beginning of the end times right now. you know, the age of Nero, where we're all just kind of going about our lives, looking at our cell phones, you know, doing our own self-absorbed things while the world crumbles around us. And
that's probably,
you know,
true.
Yeah, I mean, it feels very, you know, relevant.
All right, so let's wrap up this episode of MSRcast. Thank you for tuning in. You have been listening to episode number 198. We're getting very close to 200. We got to do something sort of cool for that. You can find us, of course, on our website at msrcast.com. And you can also find us on our, you know, metalgeeks.net. We'll take you to the same place. Find us on iTunes. Subscribe there. We're one feed, so it's MSRcast and our sister show, Metal Geeks Podcast. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at MSRcast, as well as at Metal Geeks for the other show. And you can find Sean
At the Metal Pigeon, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
So let's get into Satyricon, and we're going to play the song called Blood Cracks the Ground, and we will see you guys very soon.
Yep.
Shit, what do we say?
Keep it metal. It's been a while.
Yeah, that's right. Keep it metal.
Keep it metal.
Keep it metal, dude.
Don't at me.
At the gates of nightfall, when the sword of ages darkness on the plains of nowhere. Blood runs hot where my buried fathers.
Thanks for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit metalgeeks.net. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.